Vivek, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Sebastian. How's life?
Hanging in there, hanging in there. So I've got you on the show today because I feel like there's something you want to talk about. Is that right?
Well, I've stirred the pot a little bit. So yeah, I do have something to talk about. Let's put it that way.
Welcome to Insightful Connections with Seb. Every week, we bring you the leading voices in market research, including client-side executives, top agency leaders, AI founders, and more. This is where you hear directly from the people driving change so you can stay sharp and stay ahead. Our episode starts now.
All right, let's get into it. But first off, before we get too far down that rabbit hole, I want to just get a bit about who you are, Vivek.
Sure. I started a company called Question Pro. We started it back in 20 years ago, actually, in 2005 in my garage in Seattle. We competed with Qualtrics, SurveyMonkey, Decipher, Confirmit, and everybody else in between. And fundamentally, I ran the company for about 5 years, from 2005 to 2010. Then I took a break, did a couple other startups. Then in 2015, I came back to run Question Pro, and I've been running it since then. So that's kind of about me and Question Pro. From a product perspective, Question Pro, we sell into three different kind of user groups or profiles, if you will. Number one is consumer insights and market research. So we sell into the market research community. As a quant and a qual platform. Number two is customer experience. So we sell into the CX space as a voice of the customer tool. A third component of our business is employee experience, where we sell into the HR teams of companies as a listening tool for employees. So that's kind of at least our charter.
So Vivek, before we get too far into, you know, actually what we came to discuss today, I want to unpack a little bit about your journey in market research and how you ended up where you are and how that accounts for where you are today. So obviously, back in 2005, you made a decision that, you know, it was time to bet on market research as a space, right? What led to that decision? And you know, what kind of brought you to that moment that you felt like the market needed a Question Pro?
I wish I had like an amazing story for you, but I was, you know, right after the .com shit show, which is I was without a job, and I was doing consulting work. I was doing tech consulting, and when the shit hits the fan, consultants are the first to get fired. And I was, you know, so I was effectively without a job, and I was like, look, I need to build some product. And I've done consulting work, and consulting is great. If you think about it, consulting, you go up and down quite a bit. So one day, you know, you close a big deal and, you know, it's feast. And then 3 months, you're famine, you know, and everybody who's in, you know, professional services knows this, you know, it's a much high variance. And I'd done consulting for about 3 or 4 years and I was getting, you know, bored of the variance and I wanted to build a product. And this kind of landed on my lap. The survey product effectively landed on my lap for serendipitously, quite frankly. And then we decided that shit, man, you know, and at the time everything was moving online. It was back in 2000, 2005. Realistically, everything was moving from kind of like software to online software and online. And in the research space, things were moving from telephone surveys to online surveys. So that was a shift that was happening. And so we saw that, okay, let's just ride that wave in terms of online research and online surveys. So that's kind of was the impetus. So two or three things collided. Me not having a job obviously helped, which means I had to do something interesting. And so, all right, cool. And me getting tired of like the ups and downs of consulting also helped because I wanted to build a product which is a little bit more stable. It's harder, but in a different way. And so that's when I decided like, oh, okay, cool. And also, frankly, I hated my boss, my personal person I reported to. You know, it was kind of more of a personal issue. So all these things collided and I said, you know what, this is the time to just quit my day job and start Question Pro. And that's how we bought a couple of servers, put in my garage and started the thing. Hey, I can't hear you. One second.
Hey, I think I got you
there
back.
There you are. You're back.
Sorry, yeah, I just context here, you know, and I'm also going to include this for the listeners. The piece of equipment that I'm recording on is a piece of shit. Qual Recruit bought a laptop for like $200 3 years ago, and I'm still doing podcasts with you know, guests as esteemed as yourself, Vivek, on it. So that's why we have these kinds of issues. This may not be the last time this happens during this recording, but hopefully we'll take them in stride. So
it's all right.
I wanted to just say, you know, as a fellow entrepreneur, you know, I Christian, if you're listening, you were a great boss, loved you, man. But generally speaking, I hate having a boss, right? And the idea of bosses in general is something that I struggle with. So I definitely relate to, you know, maybe not the specific individual and Christian, you know, again, not you, but I relate to that struggle. So Vivek, I'm curious because you were posting a while ago on LinkedIn some pictures from like way back in the day, right? I think you had a tax filing from QuestionPro's first year in business, shit in your garage. Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have these stories about when the first check came through and the first tax filing I had to do. And then, you know, for us, it was more like, you know, it's nostalgic to some extent and a lot has changed. And I'm trying to kind of explain kind of a lot has changed between where we started and where we are today. So that's kind of the journey that I've been through in the last 20 years. And you know, things like, I remember the first check that you get when you start a company, and I should have framed that check. I should have taken a photo of it, but I don't actually. Obviously, I needed to cash the check. And so needed the $3,000, you know, because $3,000 paid for everything else. So the point I'm trying to make over there is, you know, some of these things are nostalgic. They have fond memories, frankly, and they're fond memories. And, you know, and in the cacophony of everything that's happening today, I don't want these memories to get lost or I'm trying to get grounded on things where we started. And there are certain principles that we follow. So even today, hopefully we follow the principles. And push that through. So that's at least the context behind that.
Okay, you just gave me a thread I have to pull on. So you mentioned seven principles. Run me through them real quick.
Several, I don't have seven principles.
Oh, I heard seven. Several?
Sorry, okay. No. It was like a few principles. Right?
What are your principles?
I mean, you talked about one of the things internally that is full transparency. Within our company, for example, we have 100% transparency on revenue. We publish our revenue numbers to everybody. We publish our cost numbers also on a quarterly basis. So we know where we are as a company. We know how well we are doing. And I believe this. I believe, you know, companies are stronger and better if they are transparent. And transparency, you know, it's easy to say that. And then, but operationally, you have to give, you know, hard feedback and say like, hey, this is not working. And even, I know you worked really hard on it, but it's not working, simple, right? And that kind of feedback and that kind of like acceptance, you know, we don't call it feedback, you can call it acceptance, is important because it strengthens the company. You know, that's the way I look at it, right? So, and we focused on what matters, right? So we are focused on revenue because we are a bootstrap company. We need to make money to survive, simply put, right? So.
Yeah.
So we have a very strong focus on revenue in terms of we do things that matter. And the third component is, you know, customers, realistically. So we are not owned by investors. So we are, you know, privately owned. We care about our customers, and customers and employees are the lifeblood of this organization. And customers, obviously, the revenue comes from customers. And I tell all my employees, like, look, you know, you can, you know, we all have difficult customers, easy customers. But they're the ones who pay us the bills. They're the reasons why we can pay the mortgage and pay the, you know, buy cars and, you know, pay the rent and everything else. So, so it is what it is, whether we like it or not. We have to figure out a way to make it work. So those are the kind of, I'd say, two or three principles that we have. I think the biggest one that has helped me, to be honest, is the transparency component. That's what is, you know, along with transparency, a little bit of autonomy also comes into play, that we kind of, address. We have, you know, when we run projects, you know, we have DRIs. DRIs are directly responsible individuals. They are like, okay, you're running this project, you have this budget, and do whatever you want to do, really. We don't go around going around like, hey, yeah, you got to do this, you got to do that. But once we have a DRI for a particular project, they kind of do whatever, you know, it's, you know, and that's what, you know, creativity comes at that point. Creativity comes if you have transparency and autonomy, then quite a lot of creativity comes out of folks in the company. So that's the way I think about it.
I love that autonomy piece. There is an anecdote I often share. So I'm obviously in Canada, right? One of the most influential figures in Canadian history, though not huge in our history books, is a character named C.D. Howe, who's actually an engineer from the U.S. I don't remember what state. But in the years prior to and following the Second World War, he was the Minister of Interdepartmental Coordination or something like that. Basically, though, people called him the Minister of Everything, right? And much of the apparatus of the modern Canadian state can be attributed to C.D. Howe. Why do I bring this up? There's a anecdote of a subordinate asking him one time for his instructions. And C.D. Howe responded, "I never give instructions. I only give responsibilities."
Good one. Good one. Yeah. Because you don't know, you know, because if you start giving instructions, then everybody becomes a pencil pusher and you really don't get creativity out of it, realistically.
Yeah.
Right? And what we're all interested in is coming up with, you know, creative ways of solving problems. So that's a good one. You know, give us the target and we'll figure out how to get there. So that's kind of the way I was putting the same thing.
I love it. I love that value. I love that you guys are living at Equestrian Pro. So just quickly, you know, we talked a little bit about your origin, 2005, getting fired, you know, starting a startup in your garage, right? Not liking your boss. Some values that you guys live by, good values, definitely relate to all them. Now, where has that left you guys? Where are you today? How would you frame Equestrian Pro's success in 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd say like I wish I could say like we are a roaring success, but we've had our ups and downs. And you know, there are years where we've grown at, you know, 30-40% year over year, and then years we've grown at 3% year over year. So you see the variance between 35% and 3% is obviously 10x, right? And so then, you know, like everything else, we've had great years and we've had bad years. Simple, right? I wouldn't say that it's only, you know, balls out success. No, it's not that case. So from a revenue and functional perspective, you know, we are about $35 million globally. We have, you know, teams global, and we are doing reasonably well, I would argue. And we're obviously trying to get to $100 million. And you know, wherever you are, you have a target, you know, just an economic target, frankly. And that's kind of at least my goal and my personal charter is to see if we can get, you know, Equestrian Pro to that scale and size. We are about 300 employees. Probably we'll get to about 600 or 800 employees, you know, if we need to get there. So that's kind of the range we are, I am looking at. So that's kind of at least from a Equestrian Pro perspective. And the market is there. So we don't believe that the market is there to kind of get us there. I don't think we're in a position where like, oh my God, will the market bear it? We compete with, you know, we compete with folks who make obviously more money than we do. And therefore, you know, we have to build a better product. We have to hustle harder and we have to come up with a better solution. So that's the way I think about it.
So Vivek, part of the reason that I wanted to have you on the show is because there's a story in the industry, obviously, that's been making waves. I think it's probably about 2 weeks ago now at this point, maybe a little more. Right? Qualtrics has announced the acquisition of research and experience measurement software Press-Ganey Forsta for $6.75 billion in a combination of cash and equity. Just quickly, Vivek, how does this acquisition change the landscape for survey platforms?
It does. It absolutely does. Here's what I kind of deduced. Most of the research agencies, companies who chose Forsta are Decipher and Confirm. And Forsta, just so that everybody understands, Forsta is really a combination of Decipher and Confirm It, really, which, you know, Decipher merged with Focus Vision, then Focus Vision kind of merged with Confirm It. And then InMoment also came into the picture and Press-Ganey bought all of these things. So eventually there are like about five different platforms. You can argue Press-Ganey has its own core platform in healthcare. Then they have Confirm It. Then they have Decipher. Then they have Focus Vision. And then they also have InMoment. And InMoment has done a bunch of acquisitions. InMoment itself was reasonably large. So there's like a plethora of different tools and services. And it's not that these tools and services are uniform and integrated. Although it from the outside, it seems like it's integrated, but you know, operationally they're not. So the real question for most market research agencies is that, you know, now that you have this consolidation between Qualtrics, Decipher, and Confirm It, realistically, there are three different platforms, and Qualtrics owns at this point Silver Lake. Really, it's the parent is the private equity company that owns Qualtrics. Really, they effectively have control over all these. My thesis is when you have control over this large of a market, your prices are going to go up. Simple. Nobody buys, you know, something for $6.7 billion and then reduces the price That's just simply not, it has never happened in the history of capitalism. It's not going to happen in the future. And my opinion is that like the prices are going to go up because the market is consolidating and because they have leverage. Simply put, you have leverage. And we are going to compete against them. Simple, right? And we're going to, you know, from our perspective. So you asked me a question. So what does that mean? It means at least, you know, expect the prices to go up, because there's consolidation. And then, you know, whoever's competing, you know, we'll compete. Clearly, you know, we competition is what keeps the prices at bay. If there was Boeing and Airbus, that's why. Otherwise, it was only Boeing was the only guy who sold planes. I mean, you know, planes would cost 3 times of what it costs today. Simple. That's the reality of capitalism. Now, you don't believe it, you may not want to believe it. That's fine. But that is the reality of what happens when you own the market. And you look at Uber, but what did Uber do? Till Lyft was actually, when Uber was really dominant at one point in different markets, and the price for Uber is very more expensive than taxis, frankly. Two X, 3X more expensive. It's only when Lyft started coming up, did the Uber price tag goes down. So I strongly believe in the core construct of capitalism, and that's what's happening, at least in the quantitative research space. There is a lot of consolidation between, and it's not like we are the only guys. There's us, there's a couple other guys also, like Alcomer and this and that. They're all who are outside this. So, but we are definitely a smaller percentage of the market, and the market will rebalance. In my mind, the market will automatically rebalance. As long as there is, you know, free and fair competition, the market will rebalance.
What does that mean in terms of the market rebalancing?
It's just the market share goes back and forth, really, right? I mean, I think, you know, if you think about it, between the research agencies, between Qualtrics, Confirmit, and Decipher, they own probably like 60, 70, 80% of the market realistically. And so that'll go down. Assuming, you know, folks like us can, you know, make a case. I still believe in, you know, free and fair competition. So we will have to make the case. It's not that we are just going to get handed over a free cake. But I do believe that there's an opportunity when these kind of acquisitions happen, people are not paying attention to all the customers. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of kind of like change in guard, change in strategy, change in direction. And that, you know, that's good for, you know, companies like us. We can get into the market and we can expand our presence.
Just quote from Qualtrics CEO Zig Serafin: bringing Qualtrics and Press Ganey Forsa together will accelerate the adoption of AI and create the most comprehensive platform for improving the human experience. There's no more important proven ground for experience management than healthcare, where better experiences for patients and employees directly impact better outcomes and better quality of care. So that's a little bit of a less cynical, rationalization for the acquisition. Do you accept that?
Well, that's seems like the only answer that we can give in this kind of a position. Yes, I mean, you know, Press Ganey has been doing healthcare for, I don't know, 25 years now, I would argue. You know, and they're very deep in healthcare. I mean, that's a fact. You know, Press Ganey in healthcare is very entrenched. But you know, if you think about the Press Ganey's core healthcare business versus Decipher, Confirmit, InMoment, which has nothing to do with healthcare, by the way. Okay, Decipher, Confirmit, InMoment have no context with healthcare. Press Ganey, at its core proposition, has healthcare business, right? If you break it down, it's not the numbers don't add up. At least from my perspective, the numbers don't add up, right? So if the core Press Ganey business, InMoment itself was $200 million. Confirmit was about 90, 100 million bucks. Decipher is at 30 million bucks, really. So you add these things up, and Focus Vision, I'm not sure exactly. So you add these things, the total revenue for the Press Ganey business, that acquisition was about $400 million, $450 million, $500 million, realistically, of which, you know, you subtract all these things out, you only have like $150 million, $200 million worth of business, and paying $6.7 billion for just that does not, at least from my perspective, it's like, okay, so something's, you know, it's not going to work. Which means you need to get revenue from the other $400, $300 million that's left behind that has nothing to do with healthcare. So how are you going to make that $300 million, $600 million by doubling the price? Simple. So, and it makes sense, honestly, if you were to just wear your brass tacks kind of like, you know, kind of game hat on and say like, look, we own 80% of the market, we can double the price. That's probably true, actually. If you own 60, 70% of the market, you can double the price pretty easily.
So Vivek, I wanted to ask you, how is Question Pro responding to this shift in the market? I know that you've put some kind of offer out there. I've seen it on social media, but I want to better understand what it is you're offering to the industry.
Yeah, we are offering effectively like price stability, fundamentally, right? We are saying that, look, you know, we are, and in fact, we are obviously putting our money where our mouth is, not only price stability, we are reducing the price by half, right? If you're paying, you know, we've already done that with, you know, between the time I made the offer, we've had three customers who already moved over.
You're reducing the price by half?
Yep. We are just giving you a 50% discount on whatever your current spend is. So if you're spending $60,000 to Qualtrics, then we'll do the same for $30,000. And then we'll go up by 10% every year for the next 3 years. But we will also need a 3-year contract. So it's not like without catches. Let me just, it's not like, hey, we can do a 1-year contract, because that's simply not, because we are taking on a huge amount of risk on the our side. From our perspective, we are taking on a huge amount of risk and, you know, and so on. So I'm trying to balance the amount of risk that we can take to the amount of market share we can capture because of through this process, really, right? I mean, it's a subjective argument. I wouldn't say that I have everything nailed, but at least, from what I've heard from almost every single CEO of every single market research company is they want price stability. They don't want to, and Qualtrics in the past have always increased price by at least 20 to 30% every year consistently for the last few years. Okay. We've heard that from every single Qualtrics customers of ours saying that, yeah, I mean, the big portion of why we chose you is simply, you know, we just wanted price stability. We just can't keep paying 30%. You know, year over year, going up at 20-30% year over year. So that's kind of the real reason why most customers want to switch from Qualtrics. And now with the added exposure of Confirmit and Decipher, the same logic applies. And what we're going to do in our offer is, you know, if you're currently paying, for simplicity's sake, if you're currently paying Confirmit $100,000. We will offer Question Pro 50 with a 10% increase over the next 3 years. So it'll come back to 74, about 80K, really. So it'll still be lower than what you're paying. But we'll start off and we'll start off at 50 and then go up by 10% every year for the next 3 years. That's our current offer. And you know, most people seem to like it, frankly. It's a reasonable change. Yes, it does cut into our profit margins the first year, but we kind of make it up for the next two in year two and year three.
So Vivek, how does an agency call in this offer with you? Do they come to you basically with their contract from Decipher, Qualtrics, whatever they got?
Pretty much. Exactly.
And they say, hey, Vivek, cut this in half?
Exactly. That's what we did over the weekend.
You're Santa Claus, man.
Not Santa Claus. I mean, like, look, I mean, this is a market capture opportunity. And also, let's all be honest about this, right? Software pricing is very, very flexible. At the end of the day, a large portion, if you really want to, parse through this conversation, a large portion of software, most people don't understand it, a large portion of software pricing is actually sales costs, if you think about it, right? Not necessarily production costs, really, right? And our, the production costs are amortized over everybody. And sales costs are actually pretty high. Sales and marketing on most software companies is is almost as big as the R&D spend at them, really, right?
Yeah.
So if you think about it, I am actually cutting my sales and marketing costs significantly, right? If a customer comes to me and says like, hey, look, man, I saw this down on LinkedIn and it would have cost me, some amount of money to get to them. To begin with, let's assume that, right? And then there is a significant cost reduction over there. And I'm effectively sharing that cost back. And say, hey, look, it doesn't cost us a shit ton of money now to go through this process. So that there is, I won't say it's 100% there, but it's some percentage of that. I can't tell you exactly what is our cost reduction because of this exercise. But I can tell you nearly everybody has noticed it. And that's because of the price increases that Qualtrics has done over the years. It's not just, people understand there's a one-time, massive cost increase here and there, but that's not been the case in the past with Qualtrics. So therefore, that's the reason why people are coming out of the woodwork and saying that now we are not going to be able to sustain a 30% annual cost increase over the next 5 years. And so therefore, let's look for alternatives. And we are one of the alternatives, obviously, that's available right now.
Vivek, if folks want to get in touch with you about this offer that you're putting out there, what's the best way?
Probably just email me or just LinkedIn. I'm always on LinkedIn, as you know. So in fact, today somebody, you know, CEO of a research firm reached out to me and we just kind of chatted up a little bit and then I passed him on to the right team. We have different teams and different sales teams that operate for different regions globally. But if anybody contacts me on LinkedIn, pretty easy to contact me. You know, my first name, my last name, Vivek Bhaskaran, and search it up. And I do respond to every single message on LinkedIn. Except for people who are trying to sell me some shit, but those ones, some SDRs, I'm like, no, I'm not going to respond to the SDRs. But if anybody wants to, you know, get in touch with me on LinkedIn, I'll reach out back to them and then I'll pass them on to the right team.
Awesome. Vivek, thanks for being on the show today.
All right. Thanks, Sebastian.